The following is a paid announcement.
Retirement. It's a journey. You'll see peaks and valleys, fair weather and foul. You'll make new friends, but there will also be bandits along the way. So protect your money, but also your health, because this journey requires both. Whether you're still preparing, just taking your first steps, or have been on the path for years, welcome to Retirement Journey with Jeff Bucher, where it's all about the health, wealth, and freedom you need to live life your way, all the way. Now, here's your host of Retirement Journey, Jeff Bucher.
You're listening to Toledo's News, Weather, and Traffic Station 1370 WSPD, and this is Jeff Bucher on Retirement Journey with Jeff Bucher. And today, you know, it's an awesome day in Northwest Ohio. We're starting to feel some warm weather, although it's about to turn back again cold, but a little bit of reprieve from all the crazy weather that we've had. And you know, last night I had an awesome night with my wife here in Toledo. It's always interesting to me when people say that there's not a lot going on in Toledo. And last night we had just an incredible evening in downtown. We started at Hollywood Casino and made a little bit of a deposit to the blackjack table, but had an incredible dinner at Final Cut Steakhouse. And then we went on to the Valentine Theater where we watched Second City, which is a comedy performance, and that company, Second City, is where a lot of the Saturday Night Live cast members have gotten their start in their comedy careers. But just a fun, cool night for us, and there's just always so much happening here in Northwest Ohio, and I encourage you to get out downtown and see what's happening there. And the Valentine Theater is a beautiful facility, and we just had just an incredible night. You know, this time of year, or this time of every 4 years, or I guess now since they've changed things, it's every 2 years, we get to see the Olympic Games. And as a former athlete, I had the pleasure of living at the Olympic Training Center in Colorado Springs on and off throughout my collegiate career. And that Olympic dream and that Olympic spirit is so much a part of me. And just watching these athletes go out and try to compete for gold. And last night when we got home from the Valentine Theater, we saw one of the gals getting a gold medal, and just watching the national anthem, it's just an emotional thing for me. Sometimes we talk about our country and the challenges we face, and sometimes we get a little down, but the reality is this is the best country in the world still, and we have so many advantages, and there's so much to be proud of, and watching these Olympians kind of brings that to light. One of the events this week kind of caught my eye. We had it on at the office this week, was the women's hockey, and they were in the gold medal game versus Canada, and really had everything in hand. They were up 2-0 with very little time left, and their Olympic dreams and their, you know, their whole life, they look for this. And especially on the women's side, they don't have the NHL or anything like that. This is the pinnacle of their sport, and they had it down to a few minutes left, a 2-goal lead, and they gave up a goal, and then they missed an open goal net, an open net goal by just an inch. It hit the post, and had that puck been 1 inch the other way, it would have went in, and they would have won gold. But it didn't happen, and Canada came back and scored again, tied it up, and then ultimately won in overtime, and the Americans had to settle for silver. But as I watched that, it just, the heartbreak and the heartache that is, you know, now that's forever for them. They were an inch from taking the gold. And now for the rest of their lives, they've settled for silver, which at the end of the day, my goodness, a silver medal in the Olympic Games is something to be awfully proud of. Nothing wrong with being second best in the world, for sure. But they had it within their hands, within their grasp, to have everything that they've always wanted and dreamed. And it just reminds me of where all of us stand and from a financial standpoint is, for many of us, as we go through life and we work and we save money, the things that we want are within our hands. They're there. We're able to probably retire and have the retirement we want. We're probably able to do the things that we want throughout our retirement, and then ultimately leave our money to our kids. And if that's something that interests you, although some of you may say, well, heck, I don't even like my kids, but you probably like your grandkids, so you want to have good planning and to do all that. But so often we take on too much risk, or we do things and we don't plan properly, and we end up losing. And we probably have crossed the finish line, is what I call it. We've crossed the finish line of money. We don't need more. We don't need to take too much risk. We don't need to do anything differently. We just need to plan it so that all the things that we want can materialize. And so I urge you that if you don't think that your plan, or you have a plan, as many people we meet don't have any planning whatsoever, we would love to meet with you. You can call us at the office at 419-872-0204. Or you can find us on the web at citizenadvisory.com. We would love to meet with you and see if maybe we can help you have that retirement journey that you've always wanted. Planning is so critical, not just from a financial side. We can look at, you know, which stocks to buy, which bonds to purchase, and we can look at all this stuff. But there's so much more to protecting ourselves, and part of that's the legal side of things. And one of our partners on the show is Spangler Nathanson. They're one of the most well-respected law firms here in Toledo, located right here in downtown. And, you know, we urge a lot of our clients to go speak with them just to make sure that the legal side of things is handled, because we can control a lot of things while we're living if we put the right planning in place. But ultimately what can happen to us, though, is if we pass away and the planning's not there, the ball is already rolling of all the decisions that we made in the past. And so having a some sort of plan on the legal side, whether it's a will or a trust or whatever it is you might need, is so very critical. You know, actor Philip Seymour Hoffman recently passed away in the last couple of weeks. Very famous gentleman in a lot of different movies, even on TV with Law and Order. Died of a drug overdose, and the details of his death were kind of scary, but what we look at then is what happens now. So he's now passed away. He had a net worth of about $35 million. He has three children, but was never married to the mother, but still has a very close relationship with the mother. And basically what happened was he was leaving the money to his the mother of these kids. But what was interesting is he had a will, and that will was made out to leave things to one of the children. But then there were two more children after the will was made out. And now there's a whole big mess, a whole big tax situation. And probably the wishes of Philip Seymour Hoffman are probably not going to happen. And so how do we make sure that the wishes that we want, the things that we want within our life, happen when we pass away? How can we control our finances and the different things that we put in place beyond the grave? Well, there's ways that we can do that. And today we've got Jim Anderson from Spangler Nathanson. He's been a practicing attorney here in the state of Ohio for over 35 years, and estate planning is one of his specialties. And so, Jim, welcome to Retirement Journey.
Thank you, Jeff. Glad to be here again.
So this is an interesting story because here's an actor. He's amassed a lot of money, and he had some legal documentation in place, but ultimately, I would say probably not enough. So let's first start. What did he have in place? And now what's going to kind of happen?
Well, from what I've read, and I've just read a news story, I've not obviously seen any of the documents. He apparently had a will that left everything to the mother of the three children, not to the children directly, and they were not married. And that has triggered a whole, what I think are going to be an avalanche of problems for the family. First of all, because they were not married, there'll be no marital deduction for estate tax purposes under federal or state law. So they're going to have to pay estate tax on every dollar over the $5,400,000 that you're exempt. Now, it sounds like a lot of money. Most people don't have to worry about it, obviously. But we'll tie into that here in a little bit, some problems people should worry about that are illustrated here. So right off the bat, they've got a 40% federal tax on everything in excess of $5.4 million. And if they'd had proper trusts in this case, they could have avoided more of the tax permanently and postponed the balance till the mother of the children was also deceased.
Well, and so now they're facing where, again, this is $35 million roughly of an estate, which is a pretty, you know, for most of us, we probably don't have to worry about a $35 million estate. But every dollar is taxed at he's going to lose roughly half, because they also, in New York, there's state estate tax as well.
Right.
And so from a tax standpoint, they're just going to get walloped.
They're going to get walloped now, and then they're going to get walloped again when their mother dies, the children's mother dies, unless she gets very aggressive with gifting and other more sophisticated techniques between now and the time she dies.
Right, so potentially they could start some playing now, but even then, there's probably not going to help the family all that much. I mean, there's only so much you can do once...
There is, but this shouldn't have happened.
Right. Well, talk to us a little bit, because I found this interesting. For those of you listening today, maybe you have a will in place, or maybe you have even a trust in place, and things have probably changed since you began that. And one of the things in his situation, which I think is probably extremely common that most people don't realize, is at the time he made this will out, he had one child. And so everything was kind of predicated upon that. And then, boom, now there's two more children after the fact. And in this particular case, the later children were added and included. I look at my own personal situation. My wife is currently pregnant. And we have some things set up with you guys at Spangler and Nathanson that I believe there's ways that you can kind of have a catch-all of children even after the fact. Isn't that right?
That's correct. Whether you provide for the children in the will or in the trust, including after-born children, that means children born after the date you execute the document, is very critical. In New York, one of the problems in this situation we're talking about is they don't have a pre-terminated heir statute. We do have that in Ohio. So in Ohio, we do have some legislative protection which would protect the situation where you say, I'm leaving this to my children, and at the time you write the will, there's only one child, and later when you die, there's three children.
Mm.
But some states don't have that, and so that can be a problem. And the other thing about it is, in this case, he had a trust, but only for the one child who existed, not the other two, and there's no way to cure that with a statute.
Right. Well, pretty fascinating. I'm the baby of my family, so that would be okay as long as I was the only one included, but it sounds like in most cases I'd probably be the one left out, so we need to have proper planning. We're coming up to a break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about this and some stories.
Retirement Journey with Jeff Bucher.
This is 1370 WSPD, and you're listening to Retirement Journey with Jeff Bucher, where it's all about the health, wealth, and freedom you need to live life your way, all the way. Well, I'm your host, Jeff, and today we're talking with Jim Anderson. He's an attorney with Spangler Nathanson, a law firm right here in downtown Toledo. You can find more information about them at SN Law. That's for SpanglerNathansonLaw.com. That's their website, and also you can reach them at the office at 419-241-2201. You can get in touch with them there, and they're great partners of the show. Also, if you have questions today, we would love to hear from you. You can give us a call at 419-240-1370. Again, that's 419-240-1370. If you have any questions for Jim and about estate planning or wills and trust, he's the man. He's the guy to ask. So today we're talking about Philip Seymour Hoffman, the actor who recently passed away in New York of a drug overdose. And the reason we're talking about him today is... as he passed away, he had some legal documents in place to kind of protect his estate, to protect his heirs, but really didn't have all the pieces in place. And ultimately, the family's going to be the one to suffer. So we mentioned before the break, Jim, that they could the mother of the children is now going to get this money. She could do some techniques. Tell us a little bit more about this story and kind of some of the things that have happened.
Well, as I indicated, top of your show here, this case is a disaster on many levels. One of the problems here is that even if she says she legally refuses to receive some of the money in order to take advantage of the exemption, they're otherwise going to forfeit the use of, it goes only to the one son who was alive at the time the will was drafted, not to the other two kids. So they're out.
Right. And so that's a strategy called disclaiming, where the rightful beneficiary, we could actually say, hey, we don't want this.
And some or all of it.
Yeah.
And in this case, be $5,400,000.
Right, would be so that way, from a estate tax standpoint. But the problem with that, though, is because of the way everything was set up, the other two children would be left out in that type of scenario.
Yeah, they're not beneficiaries of the contingent trust. And so now she's got to do something for them.
Pretty big mess.
But it's with after-tax dollars.
Right, right.
Another thing about this case that really screams out for better planning is there's no protection from creditors in any of this. for the wife, if she has any, for these kids who are minors, and none for his estate. I don't know if he has creditors of his estate with that large estate, probably not. But another problem I see with this is it illustrates the need probably, well, it illustrates the basic need, which is to update everything, wills and trusts. Anytime you have life-changing events, that's births of children, grandchildren, marriages of children, grandchildren, deaths, inheritances when your parents go along, brothers and sisters may die if they're your heirs, divorces.
Well, there's so many things that can happen. I think sometimes we think that if we meet with an attorney like you, we set it all up, then it kind of runs on autopilot. But the reality is we do have to, because things are going to change in life. Our wishes are going to change, but also our relationships, as you mentioned, with deaths of family members, with new marriages, you know, in our line of work, when we're handling people's money for retirement purposes, I don't know how many times I hear, you know, that's okay if my son gets it, but I certainly don't want his wife to get any of this money. And so those things need to be all put in place when life changes happens, and that's something that attorneys like you do.
That's correct. You just alluded to the fact that you hear that a lot. I can't tell you how many meetings I've had over the years where after we get going, the couple will lean forward and say, let me ask you something. What happens if my daughter dies? Because I don't want him having it. I want my grandkids to have it. Or what happens if my son dies? It's very common. That's a very common situation. Another one is if they have enough kids, they inevitably have a child. They don't. They're blessed. Who either has a drug problem, alcohol problem, or likes to spend money, or they don't like his or her spouse, or they're just a spender.
Yeah.
And
we have those conversations a lot where, you know, if we've got three or four kids, it's likely that we've got one that maybe has gone off the path of maybe what we were hoping or wanting.
Or creditors. A lot of them have creditor issues. And so there are ways to protect against that, which, again, in this particular case, there's no protections in place at all.
Right. What? Anything else about this particular case that stands out to you?
No, not really. It was just a case of really no planning.
Right. So, and without planning, the wishes that you have, ultimately, you're at the mercy of the laws of the land that you're, you know, the state that you're in, and quite frankly, many times in those situations, what you wanted or what you even thought would automatically happen might not happen. And so that's why it's so important. And if you're just tuning in today, you're listening to Retirement Journey with Jeff Bucher, and we're talking with Jim Anderson. He's an attorney for over 35 years with the law firm Spangler Nathanson right here in downtown Toledo. You can find him on the web at snlaw.com for spanglernathansonlaw.com. And so in this situation, he did have some legal documentation in place. It probably wasn't planned properly enough, obviously, because they're gonna just get crushed in some areas. For most of us, we may say, well, I have a will, or I think I have a will, or I don't think I need a trust. Let's first just start with, what's the difference between a will and a trust? What are the basic differences there?
Well, a will is a document that you sign that basically directs a couple of things. First of all, typically directs that you designate someone to be your executor of the estate. That is the person charged with carrying out your wishes when you're gone, and they go through the probate court. The second issue,
and that's an area where I don't think people understand that, but a will mandates that you go, I mean, it's saying you're going to probate.
You are going with all the assets that are probate assets, which is a whole other discussion, because you can get into real problems with what's probate and what's non-probate, and sometimes you don't have a lot of probate assets, or sometimes everything's probate and it shouldn't be.
Well, give us some examples of probate. What are probate assets?
A probate asset, for instance, if I own a bank account title in my name alone, that's a probate asset when I pass away. But, for instance, my bank account is joint survivor with my wife, so that's not a probate asset.
Okay.
But when she dies, if we don't do anything in the meanwhile, or she doesn't, it's a probate asset in her estate. And other assets like life insurance, annuities, things you deal with, if you have a beneficiary designation, they're non-probate. But if your beneficiary either predeceases you or disclaims, then you could have probate again.
Right.
So you have to watch that. A lot, most people's homes are titled in both names, although sometimes they're not, because one spouse has creditor issues, or a lot of physicians don't want to own assets for fear of liability exposure.
Yep, which makes sense. So that's what a will. So then, what's what does a trust then?
Well,
handle?
The trust agreement is a private agreement, basically, where you're you're setting forth all your wishes as to how you want your property disposed of. And the other two things dealt with in a will, by the way, typically are, in addition to naming somebody to be the executor, if they have kids, they want to name a guardian. And finally, of course, disposing of the property.
Right.
Those are three main things you deal with in a will.
And I think sometimes people think that a will is going to be beneficial from a tax standpoint, or if I have a will, I'm going to do something that's going to help me from taxes. But that really, there's no help there from a tax standpoint.
No, there really isn't. Even if you leave it all to your spouse, you will not have an estate tax problem when you die. And then depending on the size of the estate, you may or may not have a problem when he or she dies.
Right. With the new exemptions.
We've repealed our Ohio estate tax for now.
But it's a really favorable tax-wise scenario right now. It's from a planning standpoint, even for ultra-wealthy, if in the state of Ohio, if it's planned right, it's very favorable conditions with the $5 million exemption, also a spousal, so really it's $10 million index for inflation.
Right. It was $5,400,000, I think, this year, so... But this particular person, Philip Seymour Hoffman, they're not even using their full $10.8 million.
Right, because they weren't married.
They weren't married, and he left it to her instead of to his kids, so he's forfeiting the use of his exemption absent a disclaimer.
Right. It's a terrible story. Well, and so there's on the will side. So from a trust standpoint, what all does that – why would I have a trust?
A trust agreement is basically, it avoids, on the assets that fund the trust, it avoids probate. And trusts are private documents. Nobody gets to read them except the beneficiaries and the trustee, obviously.
Which is, for a lot of people, that's kind of, might be an important piece. If I have a will and I'm going through probate, complete public process.
Everything is reviewable at the court. Anybody can go in and look at your file when you're gone.
Whereas if I have a trust, that's not the case.
That's correct. Right. That's one thing. It's private. It basically, again, it's much more flexible in terms of a will usually is going to provide for immediate distribution. A trust can provide staggered distributions. It can hold property for life. If you have kids I've got more stories than you got time to hear about trusts where they've set up special provisions for kids, either for special needs where they're disabled or more, even more typically, where they have money issues and or creditor issues. Good handling money, or they spend too much.
And truly, having a trust is the only way to control money beyond the grave. Really, for the most part, if we just have a will, we're at the full mercy, and we hope that our kids do what's best. But if we have a trust, we can limit some things. I look at my own personal situation where I have little ones. Obviously, I wouldn't want them inheriting my estate. Right now they're minor, so there'd be a little bit of a waiting period at least. But at 18. They'd have full access to it. And I think we can agree that most 18-year-olds aren't ready to have any type of net worth at all.
That's correct. I mean, if you just leave it outright to them with a will or without a will, which is intestacy, and we'll talk about that in a minute, then they are going to have immediate access to the money. And I agree that most young people are not able to handle large amounts of money wisely. Hopefully they gain some wisdom as they age.
Well, we're coming up on a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some other of these situations and scenarios that potentially you could get yourself caught up in, and then how do we fix it so that we can have that retirement journey we've always wanted. You're listening to Retirement Journey with Jeff Bucher, and this is 1370 WSPD.
Retirement is a journey. Enjoy the trip.
This is Toledo's News, Weather, and Traffic Station, 1370 WSPD, and you're listening to Retirement Journey with Jeff Bucher, where it's all about the health, wealth, and freedom to live life your way, all the way. Well, I'm your host, Jeff, and today we're talking with Jim Anderson. He's an attorney with Spangler Nathanson, a law firm right here in downtown Toledo. He's an expert in estate planning issues, and we were just recently talking about Philip Seymour Hoffman, the actor in New York City who passed away without the proper planning, and ultimately there's going to be huge complications and details to that. And before the break, we were talking about the differences between a will and a trust, and there's a important piece to a trust that maybe sometimes people don't think about, but getting the legal documentation, sitting down with an attorney like you, Jim, and doing all that is only the first step. The second step is we have to do what's called fund the trust, which is basically transfer the ownership of assets into the trust name. Without doing that, we haven't really done ourselves any good. Wouldn't that be fair to say?
That's correct. I remember I had a situation probably 20 years ago where I routinely will write a letter to people once we decide what asset should be transferred. And I wrote this guy a letter and said, well, now to really make this effective, you got to do A, B, and C. And I think it was a mother's case, and the mother we were dealing with there, and she died, and he said, well, you never told me to do this. And I said, well, turn to page two of the top of that second page of your letter. He goes, oh.
So that's the most important piece.
Yeah, it was. And I was telling you off air, we had a situation probably about 15 years ago in Bowling Green where I was called in to look at something where another lawyer had done a trust for a man, and the man had died. They had never funded the trust. And his second marriage, his wife came in, and she saw how little she was getting under the will. I mean, under the will and under the trust. And under Ohio law, she elected to take a statutory share, which you're allowed to do. And she took several million dollars away from the kids. And that clearly was not his intent, and it was really a malpractice. And I'm not sure how that played out because I advised the people, and then we were no longer involved in it.
Right.
But it was a disaster.
Well, and that's where, so, you know, we can have things in place, but if we haven't taken the final steps to make sure that things are titled properly and assets are transferred properly and all of that.
Beneficiary designation.
Beneficiary, all of that stuff. And again, you mentioned earlier, which I think is one of the most important pieces to this, is things change. So the day that we do it, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, sometimes 20 and 30 years later, we might have completely different thoughts, ideas, needs, net worths, assets. So this needs to be reviewed continuously to protect ourselves.
Right, and I've had two couples recently come in, and we've dismantled the trust because the tax situation was not a problem, and their kids were in their 60s.
Right.
They were no longer worried about giving them property outright and worried about staggered ages of distribution and that type of thing. It was just, I'm at the point where, you know, when I go, they should just have it. All the issues they were worried about 20 or 30 years earlier had dissipated.
Right. Well, and another common, I think, misconception about trust, this is kind of getting off the beaten path a little bit of where we've been talking about, but I hear this so often, is that trust can protect us from something like a nursing home. I think a lot of people think if we have trusts that can protect us from a nursing home, and that might be true with some trusts, but for the most part, like a revocable living trust that most people probably have in place doesn't really provide any protection to nursing homes. Talk a little bit about the dangers of that and what some of the planning that can be put in place.
Well, in a Medicaid situation, Medicaid, and differentiating that from Medicare, which most senior citizens are on, Medicaid is a program, a federal-state program for indigents. And a lot of middle-class people want to use it because it's the only program that pays for nursing homes. But to be eligible for it, you have to be impoverished under their guidelines. They create these laws. And your average revocable trust does not protect your assets from the clawback of the assets and counting those assets as resources. There are...
And the reason for that, Jim, if I'm correct about this, is because if we have a revocable trust, which for most trusts, just your general everyday trust, that's what they are, it's not protected because I can revoke it. I'm still in charge. So it's still my money. And so that's why it's not out of the estate or it's not protected from nursing homes. Isn't that the main reason?
That's correct. And there are ways to, there are some planning things you can do, but you have to do them well in advance of the time you anticipate going to a nursing home in order to be eligible for Medicaid and not to have your assets have to be spent down, is the term they use.
Well, and spend down is an ugly thing. We've, unfortunately, with the amount of clients we have, obviously, occasionally we get into that. Sometimes it's too late to plan when we meet people. But one of the things you mentioned is gifting earlier in the show, and gifting's an area that can work, but that also has the clawback provision, and the state's really starting to expand how long they can look at what you're giving away, too.
Right. There's a five-year look back on transfers that are considered improper. So you have to really plan in advance. And there are some techniques you can use within a few years of the date you anticipate just to preserve some of the money for your kids if that's your desire.
Right.
But, again, the run-of-the-mill trust will not protect it. There are some trusts that you can use to protect kids, too. And we see that a lot, third-party trusts for children who are disabled. And there, we do have some very nice statutory safe harbors in Ohio we've created to protect disabled kids. There are trusts you can do for them and still help them without causing the forfeit of their eligibility, forfeiture of their eligibility. But, again, you need to be planning. And the worst thing for them is, for a disabled child, is just leaving the money outright to them.
Well, what happens in those situations, and very common, is that now they get the assets. A lot of them are on Medicaid or getting some sort of state or government assistance, and now all of a sudden they've inherited a lump sum of money, and now they're no longer eligible. Until they spend it all down, then they can be back eligible again.
Right.
But that money is just basically going down a drain.
That's correct.
Well, so one last thing, and then we're going to come up on a break. But we talked about this was we've got wills, we've got trust, but then some of us have nothing. And so talk to us a little bit about what that is called, what that means, and ultimately what happens in those scenarios.
Well, if you die without a will, you're dying what they call intestate. And basically, all states, including Ohio, have a law that defines what happens to your property. Now, this is the legislature now deciding what happens to your property when you die. And basically, there's three situations. One, you have no spouse and you have kids. And assuming you want the kids to have it, that's okay because the kids are going to divide it under the law in Ohio. The second situation is you have a spouse and kids, and they're all kids of that marriage, not a second marriage. And there again, the law in Ohio presumes you intended your spouse to have everything. We've changed our law a number of years ago to me. But where it gets dicey is the second marriage, where you have, if you have one child and a spouse who's not, and that child's not your surviving spouse's child, your spouse does not get everything. In that case, your spouse gets, again, of probate assets, $20,000 plus a half of the probate assets. And you let your mind roam on that, all you listeners thinking about, how have I got things titled? What do I have on beneficiary designations? And then the other one is we have a law, it's a two-part law that says if you have a spouse and two or more kids, and again, a second marriage, and they're not, at least one of those kids is not the surviving spouse's child, they're at $60,000 and a third, for instance, in Ohio, and the balance to the kid. But if there's two kids or more and they're not your kids, then your spouse is down to $20,000 and a third.
Well, and so there's so many different scenarios, and that's and many times people don't have any legal documents, and where we don't have a will, we don't have a trust, we pass away, we're at the full mercy now of a legislative body determining exactly what's going to happen, which I think for most of us we would say absolutely not. We would never, ever want that to happen. We want to at least have some say and some control of where the things we've worked so hard to accumulate over our life go. And so that's where the proper planning comes into place. Now, this sounds pretty tricky and complicated, but when we come back, we're going to talk about Spangler Nathanson's planning process, who should be going down this and when. And so stay with us. We're going to go through that when we come back. This is Retirement Journey with Jeff Bucher. This is 1370 WSPD.
Retirement is not the finish line. It's the starting line for 100 victory laps.
Well, you're listening to 1370 WSPD, and this is Retirement Journey with Jeff Bucher. And I'm your host, Jeff, and today we're talking about estate planning matters with estate planning expert, attorney, Jim Anderson. He's with Spangler Nathanson, a law firm right here in downtown Toledo. You can find more information about them at SN Law. That's SpanglerNathansonLaw.com, SNLaw.com. And their number is 419-241-2201, 419-240 or 241-2201. And so, Jim, we've talked about a lot of different scenarios. We've talked about the actor Philip Seymour Hoffman. He passed away and had left a kind of a mess with his family. We've talked about some scenarios that you've dealt with in your career with different family dynamics. During the break, we were just talking about how, in particular, second marriages with blended families and things of that nature create so many challenges. One of the things that I mentioned in the break was I think sometimes we think the traditional beneficiary route will handle a lot of what we want to have happen. But the reality is that's just not the case, in particular in blended families where we may want monies to be going in certain places. And if there's a divorce or if there's a death or if something happens, quite often what we want or what we intended does not actually happen. Talk a little bit about those type of scenarios with blended families and some of the things that you can do.
Well, the blended second marriage or blended family situation is one where you really want to be careful. I can tell you roughly two stories, one that worked out and one that didn't work out. In one instance, they had a couple that came to me years before they died, and they had been married. It was a second marriage, but it was a second marriage of 35 or 40 years. This was not one of these nursing home romances where it's 2 years and somebody dies. And they treated all four kids, his two and her two, as their kids. They viewed them as their kids. Well, he died, and it turned out when we got to look at everything, when she died, it turned out she died shortly after him, about a year later, that her daughters had gone in and convinced her that she should exclude his kids when they were originally had treated them all as theirs. And I had warned them when they came in about 10 years earlier, you know, we can do a trust or you can trust each other. Oh, no, we trust each other. Well, by that time, and I'm not knocking the surviving spouse here because she was vulnerable. She was feeble at that point to being influenced. But we eventually got a nurse involved who said, I heard her refer to them all as her kids, and her daughter tried correcting her. No, they're not your kids. So we got that settled so that the two stepkids got some shares, but not after spending some monies. I had another situation where we're just settling one where the widow has honored his wishes and does treat his two daughters in the proper way. But you're at their mercy.
Right, and we all want to believe, that everyone's going to do the right thing, but when we're talking about money and we're talking about, you know, things change, when there's a passing, there could even be a new spouse come into the picture after the fact and a new family. So there's so much that can happen, and we want to believe that everyone's going to do the right thing, but in your experience, I would assume you've probably seen that isn't necessarily the case, unfortunately.
Well, that's correct. And you just alluded to something else that I've seen a lot of. You know, if you get remarried and you have a trust, you can guard against what we just talked about with the kids and stepkids. You can also guard against, frankly, the second spouse pressuring the surviving spouse. I always tell them this will be your built-in excuse to say, well, I don't have any control over that, honey, so we can't spend that money on some business or whatever she wants.
That's a good point.
That's always a built-in excuse because it's there for your benefit, the surviving spouse's benefit. But then when you're gone, it does go to the kids and stepkids the way the original owner determined it.
Right. Well, and so we've talked a lot of very different scenarios. And if you're just tuning in, we're talking with Jim Anderson. He's an attorney at law with 35 years of experience. He's with the firm Spangler Nathanson here in downtown Toledo. You can find them at snlaw.com. So what is the process? This has been, for many listening today, you might say, oh my gosh, this is overwhelming. This seems confusing. The last thing I want to do is sit down with an attorney and get even more confused. But the reality is it is somewhat of a simple process. Walk us through, if I'm a person that doesn't have any planning, what it would look like to come meet with you.
Well, the way, a lot of attorneys are different, but the way I approach this is I will typically tell somebody who calls me, you come in. We'll spend roughly probably an hour. You'll be charged for an hour. We'll go through your situation. You'll tell me about your family. You'll tell me briefly about your assets, and then we will, and what your goals and desires are. And then I'll recommend something to you, and I'll give you an estimate of what it'll cost, so that you can decide then before you go any further whether you want to spend the money to set up whatever documentation we think is needed.
Well, and I think one of the biggest misconceptions, first off, they would come meet with you 1 hour, and even if they didn't move forward, they'd learn a whole lot and maybe think about things a little bit differently than before they came in, which would be valuable in and of itself. But even if they move forward, I think a lot of people think, oh, you know, I don't have enough money for a trust, or I don't have enough assets, or it's going to cost me an arm and a leg. But the reality is, very reasonably, you could invest in this type of service and protect so much. It's worth every dollar, and it's not going to cost $10,000 or some exorbitant amount. For a couple thousand dollars or less, even, you could really do a lot of very significant planning.
Well, for the consultation is basically the cost of a car tune-up. I mean, it's really... Just look at it as, you know, it's a financial tune-up. A lot of times I tell people they don't need trusts. I always say I'm not going to sell you, for lack of a better word, something you don't need. And a lot of people don't need trusts. The second marriage situation, probably going to need them. But a lot of other situations now we can skin the cat other ways.
Right, right. And this is so worth it. Well, We've run out of time with you. Thank you so much, Jim. This has been very valuable and great information. Again, you can contact Jim at his office at 419-241-2201. Again, that's 419-241-2201. Or find them on the web at snlaw.com. That's Jim Anderson with Spanger Nason. Thanks, Jim.
You're welcome.
Well, we're coming up on a break. When we come back, we're going to go to our mailbag, the questions that you've sent in to us that you want answered. And I'm going to bring in our Vice President, Kevin Booker, to help with those answers. You're listening to Retirement Journey with Jeff Booker on 1370 WSPD.
Jeff Booker, he's like GPS for your journey.
You're listening to 1370 WSPD, and this is Retirement Journey with Jeff Booker, where it's all about the health, wealth, and freedom you need to live life your way, all the way. Well, today we had just an incredible show with Jim Anderson from Spangler Nathanson, estate planning expert, and so much good information. And I urge you, whether you go see Spangler Nathanson or someone else, you must get your legal affairs in order. And so it's not going to cost nearly what many people think. It's well worth it. And again, we encourage you to do that. Well, each week we've been getting questions in to my email. And if you have a question, you can email me at jeff@citizenadvisory.com. Again, that's jeff@citizenadvisory.com. We'd love to hear from you and to answer your questions here on the air. And with that, I'm going to turn over to our vice president at Citizen Advisory Group, Kevin Booker.
All right. Well, thank you, Jeff. This question came in through our website, citizenadvisory.com. So we got a question from Susan in Toledo. Her question was, Jeff, I'm getting a tax refund. Can I take this tax refund and make a contribution into an IRA or a Roth IRA? And what does this basic process entail?
Well, it's an interesting question. And right now it's tax time. And so as you're going through your information with your accountants, you're probably trying to figure out what all is happening. And for some of you, you're going to be getting a refund back. And the answer is absolutely, your income tax refund can be directly deposited to an IRA as long as it's within the contribution limit. So last year it was $5,500, so you can put in as much as $5,500. For individuals age 50 and older, you can put in $6,500. That's the same actually for 2014 as well, so those numbers don't change. And so the process to that is, first of all, yes, you can do it. So here's kind of how you do that, Susan. First, you prepare your taxes. So you meet with your attorney, make sure you have all the proper documentation. That's step one. Number two is you determine the refund amount. And once you understand how big that refund's going to be, you can decide how much, if any, you'd like to contribute to your IRA or Roth IRA, again, up to those maximum contribution limits, which are $5,500 and $6,500 for those above 50. Then step number three, you can have the refund go directly to one account, and you can do this by filling out an IRS form called Form 8888. So that's four eights. So you prepare IRS Form 8888, four eights, and that will allow your refund to go directly deposited right into those accounts. You can choose up to as many as three accounts, so it doesn't all have to even go into the same IRA or the same Roth IRA. So then number four, if you use that, make sure that when the money gets deposited, that it gets allocated properly into the right account and for the right tax year. So step four is, if you're using Form 8888, that you're paying attention to that and ensuring that it goes to the right account. Then step number five for that is just ensure that when the money did transfer in, A, you have not exceeded any of your contribution limits, and that B, it went into the right tax qualification account, whether it's a IRA or a Roth IRA, make sure that it went into the appropriate account that you wanted. But it's a great question, Susan. And again, for any of you that have questions, we'd love to hear from you. You can email me at jeff@citizenadvisory.com, or you can go to our website at citizenadvisory.com and make any comments or questions there. And we would love to help you on the show here. So answer, in a short answer there, is yes, you can. And you just have to be careful that you're within the limits. And use tax form 8888 to help make that direct deposit. It's a great, great strategy. Well, it's been a pleasure being with you this week. Each and every week, we bring on guests that I think are going to bring value to your retirement journey. It's not just a money show. It's how to protect you and how to help you so that when it's time to retire, whether you're in retirement, whether you're nearing retirement, wherever you're at in this journey, when you pull the trigger, you can go out and enjoy life and do all the things that you wanted to do. And that's what this show is all about. You can find us on the web at citizenadvisory.com. We have events coming up in March. We'd love to see you in person. You can hear from us. You can also call us at 419-872-0204. I want to thank our sponsors, Spangler Nathanson, Evans Home Loans and Insurance, and Cafe Marie, Scrambler Marie Restaurants. Without them, it wouldn't be possible. This is Retirement Journey on 1370 WSPD.
Content on this paid program show is for educational and entertainment purposes only and not intended to be used as legal, tax, or investment advice. Always consult with the appropriate professional before making any financial decisions. Investment advisory services are offered through Alpha Star Capital Management, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Alpha Star Capital Management, LLC, and Citizen Advisory Group, LTD, are independent entities.